So I see the door is closed. I presume it is 11 o'clock. So welcome, everyone. My name is Bridget Spain, and it's my privilege to lead the service this morning. Welcome to everyone here, whether you're sitting in the pews, whether you're joining us on the web camera, whether you are listening in at some later date. Everyone is welcome here. And a welcome to our organist today, David. And David was telling me that all the incidental music he plays today was written in manuscript form in 1460. It is probably much older than that. So I know we're an historic congregation, but you know what? Beautiful music will be beautiful music anyway. So we begin with our opening words this morning. In this sacred gathering, may the joyful find a place to praise. May the inquirers feel safe to ask the questions. May the lonely feel the touch and comfort of friends. May the singers find a tune to sing. May the lost discover a path. And may each one of us experience the touch of the sacred in this hour together. Our chalice lighting. We light our chalice to celebrate our heritage of light, the light of science and of art, the light of stories and poetry, the light of nature and reason, the light of spirit and of truth, and the light that is part of every soul. And our first hymn this morning is hymn number 44, We Sing of Golden Mornings. And this is a rare golden morning. Now we have a time of quiet when we come to back to center ourselves. This is a prayer in anticipation of spring. At this time of anticipation, let us allow ourselves to enjoy the anticipation, to value the time of budding before the blossom, the time of seeding before sprouting. Spring is a time of revelation, the revealing of that which is eternal, which we see every year, but which we need to remind ourselves that each spring it is totally new. First the sap rises, then the bud appears and swells, and finally the sun coaxes the blossom to open, to display beauty amazing and anew. Every spring, we encounter something never seen before. It is this newness which brings hope and shows the potential for wholeness which may yet be. As in nature, so too with our human hearts. The human heart too experiences winter times. We all know times when our heart is frozen in anger or grief, hurt and despair. Spring will come. Now is the time to let the frosts of winter time thaw, to draw new life to our hearts. We know that if we are open to new life, it will come, slowly at first, but with the certainty of spring renewed. Let us allow spring to unfurl slowly, that we may appreciate the true mystery of rebirth and renewal. God, Spirit of life, we pause before the promise of life ever renewed, your gift to humanity. Amen. Now can we say the words that are on the back of our hymn book, words that attempt to articulate what we try to be in this community? Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest of truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve mankind in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony with the divine. This do we covenant with each other and with God. Now, our reader this morning was meant to be Andy Pollock, but Andy had a bit of a car accident on Friday, and he's still in St. James's. They're keeping an eye on him and checking him out. He is okay, but it was quite a fright for the family. So Gavin has kindly agreed to step in.
So Penny Quest is a poet and a writer, and she's also a Unitarian, and she writes, "Life is a wonderful, precious thing. Yet even in the most difficult circumstances, those times that stretch us beyond endurance, when we wonder why, there is a cruel beauty, a lesson to be learnt. Always there is something good just waiting to be discovered, some personal growth to be gained, some knowledge about ourselves to unfold, some spiritual understanding which excites our being. To learn about love and understanding, to love ourselves as others love us, to bring the healing warmth of love to as many people as we can, to spread love and understanding around us wherever we go, to people, to our fellow creatures who share this world with us, and to the earth itself. To learn to understand ourselves and to reach out to bring that spark of understanding to them. To learn about giving and forgiving, to give without exception of any of it, to give without expectation of any reward, to receive as graciously and happily as we give, to forgive ourselves and to teach others how to forgive, to feel complete, content, and loved, however much we receive, to help others in many different healing ways, to learn about peace and harmony, to feel at peace with ourselves, to live in harmony with our environment, to bring the experience of peace and contentment to ourselves and to those around us, to be gentle and to spread that gentleness in a warm tide amongst those we meet, to find peace, joy, happiness in everything we do and are and have been and will be, to discover the limitless nature of our being, to open our eyes to the beauties and wonders of this world and of the next, to understand the vastness of eternity, to realize that darkness is not emptiness, to discover our own spiritual path, to help others find their spiritual paths, to be at one with all that is, to be one."
Now, our children's story this morning is one that has been told, and I have told it before, but I think is worth, the good ones are worth retelling. And it comes sort of from the Buddhist tradition, and it is a once upon a time story. There was a man who was married, he had a family, and he was a good working man, but he, as like a lot of people, always felt a little bit more money would not go astray. In fact, the money was quite tight and he could do with it some extra money. And he had a dream, and this was a very different dream because it was very clear and it stayed with him the next day. And he dreamt that he was walking into town that he met a monk who gave him a whopping great diamond and that all his money worries were over. And a few days later, he remembered the dream when he was walking that road into town. And he was just thinking about it. That was a lovely dream. I wish it had happened. When suddenly he looked up and here he sees a monk coming in to face him, walking in his direction. And this monk is skipping along. He's whistling. He's singing. He's in great form. And they stop to chat. And the man is astounded because it's exactly like his dream. And the man said, "You're not going to believe it, but I dreamt the other night that I would meet a monk exactly like you, and we would stop and chat, and that the monk would give me a whopping great diamond, and I'd be rich." And the monk says, "Well, that's very strange. I don't have lots of money," he said. And he said, "There was a huge big stone." He says, "Oh, I picked up a stone along the road here. I put it in my bag. I thought it was interesting looking." He said, "Is it this stone?" And it was the stone, the diamond. And the monk says, "Here, have the stone." And the man said, "Are you sure?" "Yeah, absolutely. It's such a stone. Take it with you." And the man went home delighted with himself. He did tell his immediate family about the stone, but he wore the diamond, but he didn't want them to broadcast it around in case somebody heard about it and came and stole it. Then the problem was, well, where do you put the stone in case somebody is going to steal it? So he thought, right, I'll put it right under my pillow. No one will get it from here. Of course, when he put it under his pillow, he couldn't sleep a wink. And this went on for night after night after night. And after several sleepless nights, he began to think, do you know what? This money lark isn't that great after all. And he decided to go back to the monk. He gave him back the diamond and he said to him, take the stone back, but give me the wisdom that allowed you to part with it so easily. So there are two things to ask the children about, to think about with that story. The first is it really true that money does not bring lasting happiness, that it can distract us and change us, not 100% good? And the second is a question. What would you be willing to give away, do, or what changes would you be willing to make in your life to enable you to exchange your wealth for wisdom? Something to think about. And as you think about it, we can move on to our second hymn, which is hymn number 273, Immortal, Invisible, God Only Wise. Hymn number 273. For my reading, I have chosen a piece from the book Harvesting Hope by Anthony de Mello, and it's from the introduction, and the introduction was written by John Callanan, who is a Jesuit. Anthony de Mello was born in 1931 near Mumbai, India. He was the son of pious Catholic parents. He was ordained a Jesuit priest. He was a very able student. He studied philosophy, psychology, and theology. And he went on to become a renowned spiritual leader of retreats and workshops. And he was a prolific spiritual writer. I think he was very popular among many people. In the very early days as a priest, two similar experiences profoundly affected him. Firstly, one day an elderly priest asked him to substitute for him hearing confessions. De Mello entered the confessional, feeling, as he said, very holy. 3 hours later, he said he left us feeling very depressed. The other experience was when he was asked to lead a workshop on prayer for the novices in the order. De Mello presented a written text. It was one that had been used when he was a student. He found the class uninspiring, and in the question and answer session that followed, De Mello had a revelation. In the confessional and in the classroom, De Mello had followed textbooks. The books were written by other people and for other different situations. These books did not reflect De Mello's personal experiences of religious practice. He decided then that he would always remain true to what he had experienced rather than relying on any textbook. De Mello has influenced the religious practices and taken many of many people and cultures, and taken many things from his own Hindu background. From a young age, he mined the riches of the Hindu and Buddhist traditions to enrich his personal spiritual practices. De Mello brought vitality and spiritual energy wherever he went. When he spoke from his own experiences, he connected with people. His classes were alive. When he stuck to the scripts, they were inauthentic and uninspiring. De Mello always began his classes by encouraging silence and awareness. Be where you are now. Try to notice what is going on, both in yourself and how you are relating to your environment. As an educator, his aim was not so much to want to change his students as to want to make his students change, to want to change themselves. He challenged participants to question the principles they lived by. Where did the values originate? Were there really values that they continue to share? And of course, all this was controversial. The retreat center was twice examined to ensure they were keeping to purely orthodox lines. One segment of the church hierarchy, however, have from time to time been less enthusiastic about De Mello's teaching. They went on to issue a sort of government health warning on his work. A notification was sent to the bishops warning that De Mello's teaching might be injurious to those who read them. It's hard to pinpoint exactly what elements of De Mello's work disturbed those who objected, but three issues seem to be uppermost in their minds. As I understand it, they wondered if De Mello mistakenly equated God with nature. I have some difficulty in understanding where they got this idea from. In his videos, De Mello does speak about God and nature, like being a dancer and the dance. They're not the same, but they are closely entwined. Many people, it seemed to De Mello, discovered glimpses of the transcendent in the beauty that surrounds them. You might say that the grandeur of nature gives us a hint of possibly some vague idea of the beauty of the divine. Secondly, the officials wondered if De Mello gave due deference to the belief in the divinity of Jesus. They wondered if he highlighted the fact that he was the Son of God, or just Jesus was another prophet. Seems De Mello was maybe a bit Unitarian. Finally, the congregation seemed to think that De Mello did not show sufficient deference to the institution of the church itself. And here I think De Mello himself might plead a bit guilty. A warm and generous feeling towards one's own church is both admirable and wise, but slavishly following any church or organization uncritically does no one any favors. Think and ask the questions. Let us pray. And this prayer will be followed a time of silence when I invite you to sit and think of where you are and what you're feeling right now. Slow me down, Lord. Ease the pounding of my heart by the quieting of my mind. Steady my hurried pace with a vision of the eternal reach of time. Give me, amidst the confusion of my day, the calmness of the everlasting hills. Break the tension of my nerves with the soothing music of streams that live in my memory. Help me to know the magical restoring power of sleep. Teach me the art of taking minute holidays, of slowing down to look at a flower, to chat with a friend, to pat a stray animal, to watch a spider build a web, to smile at a child, to read a few good lines from a book. Remind me each day that life is not a race, that there is more to life than increasing the speed. Let me look upward into the branches of the towering oak and know that it grew slowly and well. Slow me down and inspire me to send my roots deep into the soil of life's enduring values that I may fulfill my life's destiny. Just to say that these are my thoughts. You don't have to agree with a word I say, and I may change my mind at some date in the future. Religion and the search for meaning in life is a common and constant thread in the history of humanity. Archaeology shows us that honoring the gods and deceased loved ones is part of every culture. Humans have always pondered the origins and purpose of life. Where did they come from? What's the meaning of life? And of course, what happens when we die? And we've added to that maybe, does God exist? But we live with contradictions. We know that humans are powerful. Having explored the planet, we now explore space. We have instant communications with all parts of the world. And we have created weapons that can wipe out the entire life on Earth in an instant. But in other aspects of our life, we are powerless. And there's many mysteries we don't understand. One of the least understood places, of course, is inside our mind. What makes us do the things we do? And we have to learn to live with the knowledge that our lifetime is limited. The only certainty in life is uncertainty. And faced with our powerlessness and the unpredictability of life, humans named the mystery God. And God is part of every human story. And because it is such a constant and widespread part of the human story, there are many versions of God, and we know these change over time and depend on the location where the gods exist. The predominant religion of Western culture is Christianity. Christianity is deeply embedded in our culture and in the political history of Europe. And Christianity is based on a belief in a version of divinity set down 2,000 years ago, and one based on faith. Faith in Jesus as the only incarnate Son of God, and in the redeeming power of his sacrificial death. Faith, as the schoolboy in Mark Twain's novel Huckleberry Finn said, is believing in things you know ain't so. And often the faith that we inherited conflicts with our mature understanding of ourselves and our personal experiences. When this conflicts happens, many people leave religion, and that's particularly true in the last 20 or 30 years. But this community is one that haven't given up on religion. But we are a community who questions. We've left one faith, we are still searching, and we're still asking the questions. And we ask those questions from other faith systems, science, poets, sages, reason is always, always to the fore with us. But I think we need to keep a more open mind for the nuggets of wisdom that may unexpectedly come to us. Sometimes when we depend on reason, we dismiss those lovely moments that just come to us as a gift and say we imagined them or something like that. My education as a child was steeped in religion. The school I went to was next door to the church. All the teachers were nuns. Class began and ended with a prayer, and 30 minutes of every day was devoted to religious instruction. And it was instruction in the Roman Catholic faith rather than education about religion. And I took religion very seriously. I believed almost everything I was taught. There was one exception. The teacher, a nun, was explaining about confession and the priest forgiving sins. She explained that while the priest forgave sin in the confessional, but as a white garment is stained by mud and leaves a stain, sometimes even after it's been washed, so there is a mark left on the soul. Some residual stain is left even after confession. So not only had I put many black stains on my white soul, I had inherited the enormous black mark of Adam and Eve. And I just knew that was unfair. Just thought that that's not fair, it shouldn't be. In an instant, even while young, I knew my soul was not a gobby piece of linen, that my soul was golden. And at that time, I didn't consider other souls at all. You never thought, well, are they white or are they golden? Didn't consider that at all. But I knew mine was golden, something that had the potential to shine. The image of my soul as being golden with potential to shine stayed with me. But it would be many years before I accepted that growth needs input from me. I just thought, well, it should shine, you know, it's going to magically happen on its own. That eureka moment for me, I was very young. It was very quiet. I didn't contradict the teacher. I never spoke about it. I only began to think about it in recent years. But it has stayed with me and I have learned lessons from it. One is, religion can never be set in stone. Religion cannot be taught or taken second-handed from another person. Someone else may inspire us, but belief must come from personal experience. Questioning religion is vital because every religion originated in human efforts to answer those big questions of origins, purpose, and destiny. And from our powerlessness in the face of uncertainty. And no one religion or no one person has all the answers. And as I said, while we prize reason, we should keep our mind open that on occasion intuition may come to us from an unexpected source. And remember, Jesus did say, "Seek and you'll find, knock and it'll be opened." Sometimes when we start to seek, it will come to us. Be open to eureka moments. You may be surprised when they come. And they come especially at times, quiet times of reflection. It is 30 years since I first attended this church. And during those years, I have read, thought about, and talked a good deal about religion. This morning, I thought I would share some things I find useful for navigating my life. I believe that the questions of the origin or wondering whether God exists or not, and what those attributes of God might be, or whatever happens when we die, are interesting subjects for discussion. They always fascinate me. However, ultimately, those questions are pointless. At best, any resolution that I come to is only a finger pointing towards the moon. That finger shouldn't be confused with the moon. If something sits easy with you as an explanation for those big questions, doesn't mean that's the right one. It sits easy with you. It may not sit so easy with somebody else. It is important to question, to find and live the purpose of your life. That is really the most important one. Everything else will fall into place and be revealed in time if we live and find the purpose of our lives. The writer Rilke wrote, "Live the questions so that one day you may live your way to the answers." We must live those questions, not debate them. I believe I must find purpose for my life. I believe that it's important that I fulfill the purpose. And two poems speak to me clearly on this subject. The first is Rumi's wonderful poem, The Guest House. This was written in the 13th century, and it still speaks to me today. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still treat each guest honorably. It may be clearing you out for a new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. All our experiences, I believe, are sent to teach us something. Life sends them to us because we need them. And some experiences we welcome, others we would avoid them if we could. And we don't have a choice. Our only choice is how we respond to the experiences that come to us. Do we allow them to make us kinder, wiser, learn a life's lesson? Or do we waste the lesson by allowing it to harden our hearts? And the second poem is written by a contemporary writer called Donna Markova. And this is what she writes. I will not die an unlived life. I will not go in fear of falling or catching fire. I chose to inhabit my days, to allow my living to open me and make me less afraid, more accessible, to loosen my heart until it becomes a wing, a torch, a promise. I choose to risk my significance to live. So that which came to me as seed goes on to come to the next as blossom, and that which came as blossom goes on as fruit. She refuses to live her life in fear, but to live it, to really live it, to live every experience and to make a difference, because you are meant to make a difference. I believe the guests are experiences that arrive into our lives. They're sent to us as teachers. It may take a while to see the lesson, but given time and thought, the lesson will reveal itself. In the second poem, I believe that it is sent to us, what is sent to us as seed, we have the duty to pass on as fruit. We are meant to make a contribution to life. I don't think we would be here if we weren't. The religion I grew up with was a dour, joyless affair. I think real religion should make us happier. And when you meet people of a deep, honestly held religious belief, they are noticeably happier people. They're never miserable. Buddhism explores a path of how to end suffering in life. Ending suffering is a big claim. And you say, why are people not breaking down the Buddhist temple doors to get in and learning how to end their pain? And the answer is because finding release from suffering takes an amazing dedication to hard work. And most of us are not up for that. But I know two reliable ways to increase happiness. Not take away sorrow, maybe, but to increase happiness. Firstly, take a moment or two every day to notice what you were thinking. Don't try to change the thoughts. Just notice the thought. Stick with the thought, even if it's uncomfortable. And notice that within seconds, that thought will have changed. Whatever emotions that thought engenders in us, too, will change. We know everything changes. So don't get hung up on feeling sad. Sit with the feeling and say, this too will change. Second idea for increasing happiness is to practice gratitude. Being grateful makes us happier. And there are so many blessings in our lives for which we should be grateful. Gratitude is a real shortcut to happiness. And what happens after we discard maybe the religion we were brought up in? The RTE program, The Meaning of Life, always ends, they have conversations with all types of people, some religious, some not religion. The program always ends with the question, say you go die and you go to the pearly gates and you meet St. Peter, and it's all true what you have discarded. What do you say to St. Peter? I think what I would say would be, I was given the gift of reason, and I used that gift of reason honestly as I could. I thought about it. I tried to live well and to learn a lesson. Amen. So it's time for our third hymn. It's hymn number 145, As Tranquil Streams That Meet and Emerge, and Flow as One to Meet the Sea. Hymn number 145. This will be followed by the offertory. Our notices, so the first notices are very quickly through because they're regular ones. But thank you to everyone who took part in the service this morning. And everyone, you're welcome to tea and coffee downstairs afterwards. Pam leads our Wednesday lunchtime meditation at lunchtime, 1 o'clock, and it's available on the web camera as well. The book club meet in the vestry at 7:30 on Wednesday evening. And on Thursday evening this week, Josh and Reverend Mark Hutchison will perform their Mind Travels meditation in the cobblestones in Smithfield at 7:30. Everyone is welcome. So they're sort of regular notices. Now I want you to pay attention for the next part of this, right? You're listening. Yesterday, it was a big day for Gavin. Gavin was formally brought in as a licentiate of the non-subscribing Presbyterian Church of Ireland, to which we are affiliated, and he is now ready to candidate formally for this pulpit in Dublin. That service where Gavin will candidate will take place next Sunday, the 1st of March, at the usual service, and the voting members will vote immediately after the service, so we will know whether or not we have a new minister. We wish Gavin good wishes for next week. There will be an ordination service either way for Gavin on the 21st of March. That's a Saturday at 2 o'clock. He will be ordained. It's a very different service because I don't think this has ever happened before, that Gavin will be welcomed as a minister into the General Assembly of Unitarians and Free Christian Churches, and a service here as well, we hope. So it's a very special day, and but it's important that voting members are here next Sunday for the vote. And then on the 21st, we will know at the end of the service then how things go. It's really, really important. The other unusual thing is that there's been a spam email going around from a well-known English minister here, and it's spam. Don't open it if you recognise the name. That's just a warning. This morning that happened. Also, coming into the summer, let's hope. I hope to run our usual plant sale. So I'm looking for boxes for seeds. This is very eco-friendly because we recycle all our butter tubs, ice cream tubs, old planters you may have in the shed. Really appreciate them. Now, small ones are not really good. Everything should be this size or bigger is okay. Okay. If you bring them in to me, I will be delighted with them. And just to say again, thank you to Dave for the music this morning. It's very lovely. Our final hymn is hymn number 115, God of Grace and God of Glory. On thy people pour thy power. Hymn number 115. Our blessing. Go in peace. Live simply, gently, at home in yourselves. Speak justly or speak not. Remember your power in the days of your powerlessness. Do not seek to be wealthier than your peers, and stint not your hand of charity. Practice forbearance. Take care of yourself, for you are a good gift. Be at peace with all people in the world, beginning with yourselves, and go with the dream of that peace alive in your heart. Amen.